So I'm joined today on Zoom by Alley Theatre's co-directors, Marissa Smith and Amber Barton. Their theatre piece, hashtag What Now, debuts at the Russian Hall next week. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we jump into talk about hashtag What Now, tell me a little bit about Alley Theatre and what that company is all about.
We started doing shows in 2008 and incorporated in 2011. So still fairly young company in some circles. But we're an independent company that started in kind of site-specific work. And one of our first shows took place in an alley. So we had to write on this thing for the fringe, like a company name. And we were like, what? Well, we don't have a company name. We're just some actors putting on a show. But so we named the company Alley Theatre, and it kind of stuck and actually came to mean more later as we were, you know, starting to do work that meant more to us as kind of, I guess, citizens of the city and the community, and kind of going like, we want to be telling stories that are a little bit more in the shadows or off the beaten path. And that's kind of where our work ended up going. And we also, because we had that site specific element to it, it felt like Alley, like, you know, sometimes we'll do shows outdoors, or we did a show in a nightclub one time. So it kind of made sense that that name stayed with us, but our work tends to be rooted in what's emerging from the community and sometimes it's like it's a piece that comes to us that's already an established work and it's adapted, and then we kind of figure out what it means in the current context, or sometimes it's a new creation like this. So yeah,
the press release had the opening remarks after hashtag Me Too, What Now? And in case there's members of our listening audience who are unfamiliar with the hashtag Me Too movement, what does it refer to, and what has it come to mean to you socially and personally?
Do you want to take this one, Amber?
It's a big one. Sure. The Me Too movement is very much about people sharing their experiences and victims of sexual violence, sexual assault, people basically coming together and saying like, yes, I have had this experience as well. And you kind of had this explosion a couple of years ago through the whole Harvey Weinstein in kind of what I call like popular culture. But really this movement was started even before that by a woman named Tarana Burke. But then like a lot of movements we've been seeing, I personally feel through COVID, they happen. And then it's like, okay, so we had this big thing, we went to a rally, or we did this social justice work. And then what happens after that, after this big explosion? How do we keep the conversations going? How do we keep moving through with this? And that's kind of the impetus of What Now. It's like, this is not just like some little thing that happened a couple of years ago. You know, this is an ongoing issue. And it's affects a lot of people. It affects people that you might not think are affected by it. Everybody's been touched by one way or another by these issues. And so I think it's sometimes also something that's not always talked about out in public or even within people that we know. And so trying to create something where, you know, people know that they're not alone, that people have a safe space to talk about these issues, and, you know, hopefully to keep these conversations going, or to get people thinking about how they could participate in these conversations or work towards becoming allies and changing the behavior.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think one of the things that I learned as I was, you know, speaking to interviewees was that just language is so... It's interesting how language has become such a tool and such an important, you know, we've really been looking at language some of the folks that I've been talking to in violence prevention, they like to use the term survivor as opposed to victim. So that's just like I heard the word victim for the first time when you said that. And it's like, you know, I know what you were meaning behind that, but I know that also that can be triggering for some people when they hear that, right? Because it's like, there's the prevalence of this is so much, and that the amazing thing is that people are just surviving and thriving. And kind of one of the most surprising things for me actually was seeing like executive directors and powerful people saying Me Too, and people that seem to have their stuff together, and going like, wow, you're so successful, and you seem like you're such a together person, and when did this happen to you? And that was one of the most startling things for me, of going like, wow, you know, this is such, it's so underneath, and it's so embedded in our society. So yeah.
Yeah. And I think as you touched upon, Amber, you know, there's very, very few of us who have been untouched by the issue, right? In one way or another. And if you look at any of the statistics in terms of sexualized violence, and it's crazy. Those numbers are crazy. And I assume just to a certain extent that, you know, the impetus to sort of ask each other that question in the first place came a little bit out of seeing the movement sort of blow up and then disintegrate from our eyes, and wonder how this conversation stays. But is there more to that?
For me, it was a lot about, I felt like the men in my life were excluded somehow, or either excluded or didn't quite grasp it. Like there's this thing that happens, I think, when you read things on social media or on a computer screen, where it's really, sometimes it can be, you end up shutting down a little. Like it's, you end up scrolling past that thing about, you know, something that's bad happening in a war-torn country, because you're like, oh, I don't want to, oh, and it's just, it becomes easy, you become desensitized. And I had this situation where someone was like, oh yeah, that person got Me Too or whatever. And it just was so off the cuff, and kind of, what I realized was that not only are we alienating men, cis men in this situation, but also there's just a disconnect. And maybe that has to do with the fact that, you know, a large part of the male population might be implicated in this situation. But for those that aren't, or for those that are willing to kind of take ownership around that, I really want to invite them into the conversation. And I think the what now for me was about inclusion, and about going, like, getting into a room together and going like, now we know how prevalent this is. It's out there. What do we do with information, and how can we come back together and set aside the polarization that happened about, you know, then there was the not all men hashtags, and that, you know, like it became quite gendered and quite binary, and that excludes trans folks too. So and then I think there was a part of the whole thing where there wasn't an acknowledgement necessarily, because of it just sort of had a life of its own, and because white cis women tend to have more privilege than everybody else in the world, there became this dichotomy where automatically those voices were more seen and heard, as they are all the time. And I think that online, it's just so hard to cut through all that BS. You know, it's so hard to go, wait, what did you say over there? What has your experience been like that's so different from everybody else and needs to be heard? Yeah, so it was a bit about like including those folks that I felt like weren't being heard and weren't actually having even a chance to listen. Because it's, you can't, sometimes you just don't know what you don't know. And it's really hard to get in. It's really hard to know what you don't know until you've been invited in. But I wanted to make sure it was a safe space for the survivors who were telling their stories, and for those survivors in the audience listening and witnessing as well. And that's been, that was my biggest challenge. I remember applying for this grant and being like, whoo, we're going to try and get, you know, stories from people who think they've done harm and are wanting to be accountable. We're going to get, you know, as many different humans on stage from different lived experiences, and we're going to try and put this all together, but in a caring and supported way. So it's ambitious, but I think that we're in a time where we need to be ambitious about connection and about empathy. You know, I used to think of empathy as an automatic response to something, but I think that after going through the pandemic and going through, you know, so much inundation with social media and having to be on Zoom all the time, and there's just this yearning for connection and this yearning for understanding someone on a heart level, that I think that needs to be healed. So theater is a wonderful way to kind of get people in a space together and remind us of our humanity, I think, when we're faced with all this bad news. And it's weird because this is a piece about me too. It's about, you know, sexual assault, sexual harassment, you know, not necessarily light and fluffy things, but I still do think it's an antidote to the inundation of bad news that we get on a daily basis. I do think it's kind of going that, like, I get frustrated with the news because you get inundated by this really disturbing stuff, right? But then it's just those bare facts, and you don't get to go, but what happened? What about those people? Where are they now? You know? So I think that, you know, we're trying to create a space where, you know, it's, you know, we're doing all the things you can do to make it COVID safe, you know, social distancing, cabaret style seating, you know, masks and vaccine passports and stuff. But at the same time, we want it to feel intimate and feel like, I've come into this space and I'm here to kind of commune or be with others and witness something, witness some truth from some people, and it not be like, oh, you know, like it, for it to be like, ooh, that was some hard truth. But also I got to learn that they like ice cream and they take their dog for a walk 5 times a day, or, you know, like, that person is like me in a way, you know, and that's validating for me, or I never thought about that aspect of this. And I'm going to call up my mom about that or whatever, you know, like, that's the goal.
I know the show is billed as a docu-theater dance piece. And you touched a little bit on this, you know, when you talked about interviewing people and, you know, bringing other voices in. But what does that really mean? And how did that decision come to be the way that this information was going to be presented?
Well, maybe I'll take the first part, and then maybe Amber, you can fill in the second part. So I had taken a very quick workshop with this Lebanese artist in this thing called Head from Verbatim, which is a style of documentary theater work. Basically what you do is you make very simple audio interviews with any audio device. I use my iPhone, I use Zoom, I use phone recordings, and then you edit it into an audio script, and then the performers who are cast in the play then perform what they then put these earbuds in, and they hear this audio script and they perform the audio play verbatim as they hear it live on stage. And they have rehearsed it a little bit, and specifically they've rehearsed a lot of the moving and the movement that Amber is going to talk about. But I thought about using this form with this subject matter mainly because when I had done the workshop, it was just this thing where we went away and like interviewed someone else in the workshop, and I got partnered up with this guy, and he ended up saying my words, and I was talking about this awkward situation I'd had at a restaurant, and it was very like, I don't know, there was something very humanizing about seeing my mannerisms and my story told through this strong man's presence. And there was something about like our gender stereotypes that play in our brain all the time that we don't even know are there, and that I was seeing a story that might have been a very stereotypical story for a woman working in a restaurant, but through his voice and his body it was new, and it was like, oh. And so something struck me there, and we do experiment a little bit with that gender dynamic in the piece, although we don't do it throughout the whole piece because there are certain stories that need to be told by it through a certain voice. But that was the sort of first kernel of inspiration for using the work with this. But it also is a very like subtle and specific style of performance. What you end up hearing, like this, like little ums and ahs and laugh, little nervous laughter or a pause, and that you can't really capture if you had it written down on a page. And so when I was thinking about like documentary theater and capturing the truth of someone's experience and in their words exactly, it lends itself very well to that. And this subject matter really felt like it demanded that kind of specificity.
Yes. And then the next part is Marissa gets in touch with me. It's like, hey, I'm doing this thing. You want to come on board? And I'm like, sure, but I have no idea how I'm going to make movement for this. And I think it really comes down to what Marissa was just talking about, the subtleness and the specificity. Because my first thought as a in my choreographer brain or my movement direction brain, it's like, how can I possibly create movement that is appropriate to the subject matter, that's not just coming off as like another show or all those type of things? And so I was up for the challenge, but I was really nervous. I have no idea how to do this. And then once we were all in the room, it's just like, oh, I was like, I just see the actors, they're talking and discussing, and we're sitting on chairs. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, why don't we just kind of use these chairs? And then to make a long story short, the chairs, like we're sitting on chairs, we're moving chairs, we're creating images with chairs. And it's just enough that this very intricate, subtle, specific blocking becomes this like dance, if you will, throughout the space. Because it's one thing to tell those stories, but there are moments where they just, you know, you hear a story and it's a lot. And so how can we support the audience? How can we support the actors? How can we support also the voices that have graciously shared their stories with us? We can do that by stirring up the movement just a little bit, the energy in the space. And so creating pictures, framing the actors, and trying to create it too, where my hope is that both the audience and the actors feel supported, feel safe. And that just kind of gives us a break too, that there's something else to look at. There's something else in movement in time that kind of helps flush these stories out or fill in the dots of your imagination as you're listening. And it's been a super really interesting challenge for me, like who's someone who works primarily with movement, and to see what is possible and what is powerful with very simple ideas. And it's been a treat, if you will, I could use that expression.
Might feel a little strange to use the word treat with the subject matter, right? I can definitely appreciate how metaphor and symbolism really help us take hard medicine sometimes and open our minds to being able to see and hear things with different eyes and ears. The things perhaps that you found most challenging about the creation of this show, or maybe most hopeful and liberating, or what you're most proud of so far?
Okay, I'll go first. most challenging, editing the content. Like, I have almost 70 hours of interviews and had to get it down to 80 something minutes. And that's a task. And not only just logistically trying to go through it all, but also just the feeling of like, oh, I started out with this thing of wanting to be so inclusive. And yet you still have to go back to people and be like, so this is the small part of the story that I'd like to include, or maybe we're not able to include your interview, but thank you for, you know, inspiring us further. So that part has been really tough for me. And then in terms of, it's just the kind of thing, I think a lot of documentary makers go through that, you know, you film or you audio, whatever your format is, so much, and it's the hardest thing, just, you know, getting it down to a palatable amount for the audience. Like, it was really important to us that we keep it to, you know, short, so that people aren't turning off or people aren't feeling, oh, this is overwhelming. And then in terms of like surprises or like things that were like just beautiful moments, like I have had the honor of connecting with so many beautiful people in the interviews, and it's so incredible what they were willing to share with me and with the audience, and incredible human beings, like just in general, like, and also just their humanity and their humor, you know, like, I think it's just so neat to hear, you know, people who have gone through this, but then they're like making a joke about whatever. And it's so refreshing and also just affirming, knowing like, yes, of course we are resilient. And we don't want to define people by these incidents that happen to them. But it's important to share their truth. So we do have these moments in the show where I'll have interviewed them about, like, you know, what's your favorite food, things like that. And that gets shared with the audience as well. And that was sort of a discovery in the first workshop of the piece of like, what can we do to give more context to these people? And just the team as well. Like, I couldn't ask for a better, more talented, more connected and beautiful, humble team to work with and artistically. I feel incredibly blessed. So because this piece is, you know, it's got some hard truths to it, but it also has some beautiful moments of holding up. But because it does have those harder elements, you need a strong team, and you need people who are just going to be caring with themselves and caring with everybody else. And then finally, just like connecting with other people in the community. Like, we've got a team of counselors and post performance facilitators, and it's been really neat kind of telling them about the work and how that relates to their work. I love that kind of thing about doing theater that is a little bit more about things in the real world, or you have a partner organization, like we're partnered with Good Night Out, like speaking with violence prevention workers and counselors and going like, right, you're doing this amazing work, and that's so inspiring. And then they're sort of getting inspired by this, and that kind of connection has been cool too. So,
I think, you know, the biggest takeaway for me is how much I have learned and how much I have learned I have to also unlearn. And there's just so much work to do. And it's really easy in our lives, you know, I call it being on the grid. You go here and here and here and here, and then you just get busy. And sometimes you just, for whatever reason, you don't think about certain things. It's outside of your bubble or your grid. And this piece for me has been, you know, the privilege of a wake-up call of, hey, there's these organizations that are doing this. These things are happening to people. It's not just on a TV show. It's not just on a movie. This is, you know, people in our city that you're probably living next door to in your apartment building, this is happening. And that has been a huge thing I'm still kind of thinking about, and thinking about how I want to go forward in the world beyond this play. I have to say, like, Marissa has just been absolutely tremendous in how she has created the space for all of us to feel safe to do this work, and the generosity of all the people who have come forward and how they have felt that they can trust Marissa with their stories. And to be honest, there's moments in the space where I struggle feeling almost unworthy of these amazing stories. How could we completely do it justice? But that's what it is. It's about these stories. So, you know, for me, when I'm making decisions in the room, when push comes to shove, the story is always the primary emphasis of what we're trying to support and share. And then once I kind of put that in my brain, everything else falls into place. It all makes sense how to go forward with making a decision. So lots of learning, lots of beautiful truths, lots of unlearning. And like Marissa said too, an amazing team of human beings that are all on the same page to do this work.
I love that you bring up the level of unlearning that we need in this, and especially I think with this subject matter of sexual assault and sexual violence, because we're so inundated by it. You've dedicated some performances to being gender specific. Can you talk a little bit about what that?
So it's something that we came to when we did a workshop presentation back in 2019. I just started thinking, like, you know, for the men in the audience, it would be hard, I think, to attend this and then also attend a post-performance conversation and feel like you could ask a question or say something, which is kind of what we want. and also just to have a space where you don't have to feel like, oh, I'm being looked at as the perpetrator, you know? And then for women who either are survivors of sexual assault or have someone that they know that they want to bring to, that they just want to go to a performance where they don't have to worry about having men there who you may have been a perpetrator or may look like they're a perpetrator. Something like that. I mean, this is having generalizations. Like, I really want to clarify that not all men are perpetrators and not all women are survivors. That is, just want to make that super clear. But, you know, statistically, that is how kind of things fall. And then in terms of our trans and non-binary night, just to clarify that, trans men are included in our men's night, and trans women are included in our women's night. But we also felt like it was important to have a trans and non-binary specific performance, because I did interview a number of trans and non-binary folks, and that experience is just, you know, it's more unique than it's just not, it's not quite as simple. There's layers of complexity to it. And I think that also I wanted to create a space, because I think also, like, mainstream society is still catching up with how to be inclusive, frankly, whereas, like, as a company, we're still learning, right? And I think that if we have a facilitator who is non-binary and we have counselors there that are, you know, trans and non-binary, that there's we're making an effort to create a space where people might feel more comfortable. And that is, it's an offering and an invitation. And it's not meant to, you know, say, oh, you can't come to any other performance. You know, like, everybody is welcome at all the other performances, but it's just about creating an atmosphere where you feel like, I'm going to be with my comfy crew for this, and I'm going to have a nice night where I don't have to feel like I have to perform or put on any airs, you know? So yeah, that's where that comes from. I probably am not using all the right language either. And so I just want to say, like, it's coming from my heart as an open invitation and as a kind of, like, feeling of, like, well, I might want that, you know? It's also kind of just like, I feel like the people that I interviewed that are trans and are non-binary, I don't know, we had such a great time talking and they are such amazing humans and I feel like they should be celebrated. And so in a way it's kind of a celebration too of like, wow, you're pretty great. This is awesome. Having to put up with so much from the outside world and just being you, you know, and being like from the people that I spoke to, being a pretty awesome version of you.
You mentioned that it's presented in partnership with the Good Night Out Vancouver. And also, if people purchase a ticket, $2 is being donated to the Pacific Association of First Nations Women.
Yeah. So I started working with Good Night Out Vancouver in 2018 with Stacey Forrester, and she was very helpful in terms of just kind of framing, like, you know, just from the work that she'd done in the community, like learning from her own mistakes and learning from, you know, just from like always sort of bringing it back and putting it into the survivor's perspective. Like when I was thinking about what the performance space should be, how should we have the audience? How should I be reaching out about this? Like she was really good for proofing my outreach emails or public call for interviews for us. So things like that, and then connecting me with the violence prevention community, like she's been really good at, you know, making introductions to other organizations and introductions to potential interviewees. She's just been an invaluable resource, and they also will be providing a resource table that they have at their live events. So Good Night Out is they're a violence prevention organization that deal with like creating a culture of consent, but with a focus on nightlife and entertainment. And so I love the name Good Night Out because it's sort of positive and forward thinking and proactive. And that's very much embedded in their values as an organization as well. And we had a conversation actually. Originally, Good Night Out was supposed to be the beneficiary. That was part of the partnership. Like they provide all this you know, networking for us, and then in return, you know, we give them a bit of promotion of their organization, but also raise some funds for them through the ticket sales. But then we talked about it, and we just felt like at this moment it felt more important to go to a BIPOC organization. And so we did some research and just felt like this was one that felt right, and so that's why the benefit organization is different. And both organizations are doing wonderful work in the community. Man, if we could give away dollars to every organization, there's so many that need the money and are doing wonderful work. It's hard to choose when you think about that. But you know, Alley Theatre's been donating a percentage of our ticket sales for a number of years now. Depending on the theme of the play, we'll pick an organization to partner with and donate revenue to. It's something that I went to a show early in my career that did that, and I thought, gee, that makes so much sense. It's that thing of like, if you donate on behalf of someone, maybe they're more likely to donate again because they feel like, oh, I've done it. Or, oh, what is that I just donated to? You know, it's built in, right? And that feeling of doing something good inspires people to do more good, maybe.
How can people do good and find you online, get tickets, find out all of the information about how to see this show, #whatnow?
The simplest way to do it is to go to our website, which is alleytheatre.ca. Alley Theatre, like Alley, A-L-L-E-Y, theatre.ca. And then you can buy tickets from there. And it's on from the 27th, October 27th to November 7th at the Russian Hall. Live, in person, COVID safe.